KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm John Sepulveda, in for Michael Krasny. We are seeing a uniquely rural American tragedy play out in Butte County. As firefighters get a handle on the campfire, we are seeing the strains of rural life laid bare in the burn zone. We'll check in on the latest developments in Paradise and how survivors are looking at their individual and collective futures. Then at 9:30, the FBI has confirmed what many have assumed. Hate crimes are up about 17% in 2017. Why and what could be done to stop this alarming trend? Stay with us for those discussions coming up on Forum. Welcome to Forum. I'm John Sepulveda in for Michael Krasny. California's most deadly and destructive wildfire on record continues to burn. The Camp Fire in Butte County has killed at least 77 people. It has destroyed more than 10,000 structures, and there are still nearly 1,000 missing. The town of Paradise was virtually destroyed. The fires also created this lingering layer of smoke that is stretching all the way from the base of Mount Shasta to San Jose. And it's very hazardous in some places. I just came back from Paradise over the weekend, and it very much appears to me that this is a uniquely rural tragedy, that the fire has exposed the deep strains of rural life in America. For an example, an economy that lags behind more populated areas. In fact, many of the empty stores in Chico have become important meeting spots for survivors, including the vacant Toys R Us building there. And in fact, that's where we're joined now by KQED's Raquel Maria Dillon. Raquel, why is this vacant Toys R Us so important?
Well, first of all, this is where people are bringing a lot of stuff. But I want everyone to know they have enough stuff. They have enough used clothing. They want, if you want to help, what is needed here is new items, not clothing anymore. This building has been turned into a local recovery center. They are just sort of getting it off the ground right now. It's a coalition of faith-based groups and local political activists and homelessness activists who have come together to sort of process all this stuff that has been coming to Chico and begin to lay a groundwork for counseling and services give people a place to come outside of the Red Cross shelter network just give them support.
In a moment, we're going to hear from our colleague Michelle Wiley, who's going to tell us why people aren't going to some of these shelters. The Toys R Us is very important. The abandoned Sears at the Chico Mall is very important. That's actually become the site of the FEMA Center. And one of the things I noticed, Raquel, when I was at both the parking lot Walmart camp and by the Toys R Us, by the Lowe's where people are camping at the Chico Mall, is that there really is a lack of hope with many of the people, especially many of the people who are older. Have you found that in any of the conversations you've had with survivors there?
Yeah, last night I went to a vigil at the First Christian Church, and it was very sad. People were coming out with, tears in their eyes, red eyes, and hugging just filtering in and out. It was casual, but the goal was to create a space for people to grieve and pray when you're fleeing. One guy said, when you're fleeing a wildfire, that there's no time for that. And so this was important, and he brought his family. I got sort of I talked to two different kinds of people there. Some were just devastated and trying to figure out what to do next and really struggling just to put one foot in front of the other and not knowing what to do. Others were more optimistic and talking about Paradise coming back stronger than before. Let's go with the optimistic angle first.
All right, let's do that.
The gentleman I spoke with was Seth Hendrick, and he's a 38-year-old software developer. And he just bit of his escape story was he was thankful for each twist and turn and hopeful about the future.
All right, well, let's hear. You have sent some audio in. Let's hear Seth right there.
You can use it like fertilizer, you know? You can use it to grow bigger, better, stronger, different. I mean, who am I going to be in the face of all this?
So basically he is suggesting that we take lemons and make lemonade is one way to put that fertilizer reference. But again, I didn't hear a lot of people who are like that. I'm going to go to Michelle Wiley, who's in studio right now. Raquel, stay with us for a moment. Michelle, what were some of the people telling you that you found, especially in some of these tent encampments that are throughout the city in Chico?
So in terms of moving forward and how they're thinking about things, I'll agree that it was a mixed bag, but I talked to more people there who were just feeling really devastated. they don't know exactly what the next step is. And at this point, that's all they can think about is, where am I going next? What am I doing next? Do I have a place to stay? Do I have to go to a shelter? Because a lot of people don't want to go to these shelters. So I think that for some, maybe they can look at this in a positive light, but especially for people who are really impoverished, people who are maybe were homeless before the fire started, they're feeling like at a loss for how to move on.
And Raquel, before we say goodbye to you, can you describe what it looks like right this moment where you're at? Are we starting to see any of the smoke clear? And what are the latest on the fire containment numbers?
The weather has turned this morning. At the briefing, firefighters were very optimistic about now that there's no more red flag warning, they are gaining the upper hand on the fire. There's still a lot of rough terrain and steep cliffs that they need to build line on, but they're doing a lot better. And I can see blue sky.
Well, that's
here
amazing.
That is
really saying something, yeah.
The air is gradually clearing, and there's still a lot of work to do. People here, the organizers in this little grassroots shelter, they know how long this recovery effort is going to take. They're just beginning to get their heads around that and figure out what to do. Chico has a population of like 86,000, and they're talking about 20,000, upwards of that, people looking for homes and shelter, and that's going to be a large task.
Raquel Maria Dillon joining us from in front of the Toys R Us in Chico, which has turned into a sort of meeting place for supplies. Raquel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And as we let Raquel go, one of the things she brought up, Michelle Wiley, is that it's really important not to give used items at this point. She said give new items if you can. What I heard from organizers, as you heard this weekend, cash money. That's what people need. And they can go to kqed.org to find a place to give to one of the charities and non-governmental organizations that are going to help. Joining us also in studio is Slate's April Glazer, who just returned from Butte County. She was by the area where the fire is believed to have started. Hi, April.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about this hope aspect. We just heard about the housing crunch. Raquel was talking about that. We know that housing was already in short supply in Butte County. When you talk to people on the ground level about how their outlook is for the future, what did you find?
People just don't know what the future holds at all. I mean, we were talking to families where it was like 9 people in a 2-bedroom house already, and they already weren't sure, like, if they were going to have a job next week mm-hmm. or not. And then the fire came and everything got piled into a car that maybe worked, maybe didn't work, and then they found themselves in a parking lot. So, you know, the future was already uncertain for a lot of the people in this area, and now they just don't know even if the place where they're staying, the encampments where they are going to be there tomorrow, if they're going to be disbanded.
One of the other things that we're having a question of is, where is FEMA? Where are FEMA trailers? Why isn't FEMA providing shelter? Why isn't this Toys R Us, for example, being used as a shelter? We saw one person report that today. Raquel was not able to verify that. Do you have any idea, April, through your reporting, where the heck is FEMA in all this?
There was a real lack of a federal presence. I mean, this is such a massive disaster, and one would expect that there would be a federal presence there to help address, you know, the massive emergency concerns. But really, all I saw was Cal Fire. I saw, you know, the Alphabet soup of police agencies, mm-hmm. You know, California
All
Highway Patrol.
All working very hard. The state and
around
local.
Around the clock.
Yes,
yeah.
It's amazing.
And they are receiving a ton of donations, too. I mean, when I went to the public information officer's tent at the camp, at the fairgrounds, where they were sending reporters to learn more about, you know, checkpoints that they could go through, there were cookies that people had brought. There was food and water that people had brought. So people are giving a lot, you know, everywhere they can. But there was not FEMA present. I did hear, though, from the public information officer at the fairground that they do expect FEMA to come in the next few days to set up some kind of provisional housing. But I did not see them when I was there this week.
And that's the other thing, is that there's a lot of misinformation. Michelle, you heard a lot of different rumors and kind of, will they be forced to go from the Walmart parking lot? Won't they be? I mean, there seems to be a real lack of information going to the people on the ground.
I mean, I think part of that is because there are a lot of people volunteering. There are a lot of different agencies involved. So there's a lot of misinformation, and people are getting it in various different ways. And So when we were on the ground at the Walmart parking lot, there had been a notice that they were encouraged to evacuate on Sunday, but they weren't being forced to evacuate. But I heard from so many people that they didn't know whether they had to leave or not, and they didn't know where to go. Part of the problem with this isn't necessarily, you know, finding housing to live in or finding a place to stay. Their car's burned. They have nowhere to get to the places that they want to go. So it's not just about, like, finding a hotel room. It's getting to a hotel room.
Yeah, it was funny. I spoke to a woman from Davis who is a social worker named Laura Loving. She went up to help just on her own, completely volunteer effort, had raised something like $15,000 in gas cards. And she said there was no point in giving the gas cards because nobody had a car to use at this point to leave this parking area. The other thing we heard was that we were able to see the list of vehicles that had been towed, that had been left. There were more than 120 vehicles, and these are vehicles that just people abandoned on the street while they were running away from this fire. I mean, there is a lot of loss and devastation in these camps.
Yeah, absolutely. I met a lot of people who said that their, you know, their homes had burned down. That I spoke to one woman who got into a car accident trying to flee, and her car was totaled, and then she had to jump in someone's truck and try and get out. And then as we heard, people trying to flee ended up in this huge traffic jam, and they had to run literally down the road trying to get out of Paradise. Yeah.
People's cars were burning, like, while they were exiting. And, you know, a lot of these small towns that have, like, 3,000 people, I mean, it's just this kind of sprinkling of small towns throughout Butte County. There's one road that connects them all. And so everybody was on one road, and their cars were literally burning as they were going. I was talking to somebody at the Walmart camp who said that he was watching fireballs of embers drop 10 cars behind him, and the cars would turn into grenades. They were stuffing people into cars that had any open room. And, you know, this fire, you know, it exploded in, like, 15 minutes for some people. They saw smoke across the sky. 15 minutes later, there's a wall of fire that they have to run from. And so the timing of this was just so fast.
And that brings us to why you were in Butte County, because you were looking at our colleague, Ted Goldberg, Marisa Lagos, have talked about a potential, and I want to make this very clear, but there might be a potential interface between PG&E equipment and the beginning of this fire. You went to that area. What did you find in your reporting, April?
Sure. So I went to Polga, California. It's a small, almost ghost town that was a mining town and a railroad town at some point. And I've been going there already for about 4 years because the woman who owns it is actually a friend of mine. And so when I found out that this was a site where potentially PG&E equipment had some trouble that could have potentially sparked the fire, I wanted to come out and check it out. They had Cal Fire was there investigating, and they had closed down a road in the town. Now, this is a town with, like, three people that live in it. Town I want to use with finger quotes.
Right.
And there's two roads, and Cal Fire had shut off access to one of the roads, Camp Creek Road, down Polga Road, and they had set up private security, not police officers, that were sleeping all night in their cars, not letting us go up that road. And, you know, they weren't protecting nothing. I mean, there were caravans of trucks in and out every morning investigating, I think trying to find out what was the source of this fire and you know, where the spark really came from.
And one of the things that you found is one of the things we found, which is it's very difficult to get in these areas. So
yes.
For people who do have homes that survived, which that's not very many people, but if they had that fortunate outcome, you know, they're going to have a hard time getting up there.
Yeah, fortunate is a strange word, because most of the people I talked to who are still in the evacuation zone now didn't have the option to leave, right? Like, they got in their car, they wanted to go down the road, but the road was trapped with fire. So they had the choice to either stay in their house and fight the fire or burn to death. I mean, I met multiple families throughout Concow, California in particular, where we were driving through, who were still there, that were fighting spot fire after spot fire, terraforming, moving dirt as fast as they could to keep the fire from coming as close to their house as it was coming. And they had no choice but to stay. And then they stayed, and now they can't leave, and they have to survive on whatever they have in their homes now.
Well, we want to hear from folks who either survived the campfire, have questions about the scene at the campfire, their own insights about what this says about the state of rural America. 866-733-6786. About 10 to 20 minutes left in the segment, depending on how long we go. That was a cue to my producer to let her know we might go longer. 866-733-6786. or you can join us, forum@kqed.org. You know, this is very strange in a way, segue, but one of the things I kept hearing was that this was apocalyptic from people. So I actually looked up the definition of apocalypse because I wanted to make sure we were using the word right. And it comes from the Greek meaning to clear, to reveal. Is what it means. And what I'm saying by that is the reason I bring all this up is, Michelle Wiley, this fire really showed that there is a lot happening in rural communities that we might not have noticed had there not been this devastation, or we don't notice all the time without this type of devastation. Lack of health care. We heard a lot about that. Confusions about what insurance coverage to have. Poor economy. Bad jobs. People getting evicted because of the housing crunch that we talked about. Not thorough roadways. You talked about that, April, with the fact that we have, you know, one road that connects all these disparate places. And lack of meeting places. That was another thing. That's why Walmart has become such a popular setup. And we were staying at a house, Michelle, and the reason I bring this up, we were staying at a house where we heard a story about a woman who had just lost her job and has now lost her home, and we haven't even gotten to the fire yet. Tell us a little bit about some of these stories we've been hearing that kind of highlight the state of life before this fire revealed it.
Sure. So I spoke to some people there, one man in particular who stands out. He was homeless before this began. So he was living in the woods in Paradise, and he'd been living there for several years. And he told me that the morning that the fire started, he looked out of his tent and he saw the fire just a few feet away from him, mm-hmm. and realized he was going to have to run. And this guy, he had knee braces. He had knee braces on both his knees.
Disabled.
So he was disabled. Yeah. So he was pulling all of his stuff and running down the road, trying to get away from the fire. And I think that when we think about this, we should really focus on the fact that this fire compounds. You know, it's not just the devastation that it caused. It's what was happening before then. It's the housing issues that already existed in Butte County. It's the healthcare issues that you spoke of that already existed. This fire just compounds on top of those things and makes everything more difficult.
And the other thing, April, is the stoic way of life in this rural area. I mean, Michelle had excellent reporting about a woman who had been walking around a shelter crying to herself during the day because she didn't want to let other people know that she was going through this pain about losing her mother. You said you've gone up there a lot. Describe a little bit about kind of the attitude of letting other people know their pain there.
Well, you have to realize these houses, every house is 20, 30 minutes apart, right? I mean, not in the case
not
of Paradise.
Not in Paradise, but around the area.
But around the area, that's super not uncommon in any way, or 30 minutes to get to a gas station. And people take care of each other. You know, I did really get that sense. People were driving around collecting pets. People were, you know, said that they have known each other. They called to check in on each other. But at the same time, you have to take care of yourself out there, right? Like, if you call for help, that help is not going to come for an hour. And so you need to know how to build a fire yourself if you need to. You need to know how to defend your land if looters come, if you need to. And there's this real sense of rugged individualism, not because people have some political philosophy, but because they need to be that way.
That's a really great point. We're going to go to our first caller. This is TC in Pardon me, it's going to be Deborah in Chico. Deborah, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning.
You were talking about the people camped out. Tell us about this.
Well, there was this unofficial, impromptu sort of shelter situation that sprung up in the Walmart parking lot. And the officials are trying to get everybody moved to shelters. But as of last night, there were still people camped out there. It was down in the 30s. It's, you know, they're just people traveling around in their loaded vehicles looking for somewhere to be. The shelters are far away from Chico and from where most people are used to, you know, getting help or you know, just going to stores and things like that. So what we've seen is this sort of dramatic influx of homelessness in an area that has no housing stock, really. All the rentals just went within 24 hours. People bought houses within 2 days. You know, all the houses that were on the market for 3 months because it slowed down this summer, suddenly they're gone. So people who had insurance were able to do something. You know, people, I heard a woman in the CBS yesterday say her boyfriend and his parents and his two siblings are in her apartment here in Chico with her. That's the kind of situation. And the thing is, this is an amazing community with a tremendous spirit of assistance and support and pulling together. But the weight of this is a little frightening about what this foretells for homelessness in the area.
Well, not just that. And I want to make it very clear, we are not at all, and if anyone even thinks this for a second, trying to kick Butte County or Chico while they're down by highlighting these problems. But
no.
But I do think that there was this sense that this tragedy, this devastation, was bigger than how the town itself could respond. Am I wrong in sussing that out when I was talking to people in your neck of the woods this weekend?
Well, I would say that who is prepared for this kind of disaster? You know, and when you have a smallish community, or mostly rural, and a small town, even in a fairly under-resourced county as it is, mm-hmm. then you've got people who are trying to scramble to put things into place, who are amazing and doing amazing work, but you can't, it's just so hard to respond fast enough. And, you know, a lot of county employees have lost their homes. People who are working in the offices that need to be helping serve those others are scrambling to figure out how to find enough housing to stay stable for more than a few days while they're trying to do their jobs. So many of the first responders,
right.
You know, 14 of the, 16 firefighters, a police officer in Paradise lost their homes. So it's that kind of devastation. How would you be prepared for it? What I'm wondering about, maybe you know, where is the FEMA shelters? Where are the shelters and the kinds of emergency housing FEMA can provide? Because it's 10, 12 days out now, and
yeah, 10
there's
days.
Nothing here.
Yeah, and Deborah, we're going to actually answer that with Michelle Wiley. The truth of the matter is we've asked that question. We are not getting a response. You know, the president came. Do we have anything to tell Deborah?
I think as we spoke earlier, we've heard that FEMA is scouting areas. We've heard that there's going to be a presence. But at this point, we don't have anything concrete.
We're going to continue this discussion for the next 10 minutes after the break. Then we're going to talk about hate crimes and the rise of hate crimes. Joining us, April Glazer from Slate, Michelle Wiley from KQED, and yourself. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Thank you.